Building a brand or launching a business requires an incredible amount of deep thought and research. And there are many factors, of course, on the checklist to success one needs to consider. From making sure there will be a demand for your product or service, to ensuring your offering is unique and best placed to provide a solution your future customers are searching for. It takes time, money, graft, and incredible confidence before you can press play, hoping that lightning will strike and you'll be on your way to growing a robust brand. But there is often a vital X factor I've not yet mentioned: your personal values. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bache. Today, my guest is Blake Mycoskie, a serial entrepreneur, philanthropist, best-selling author, and founder of Toms. Blake started and sold four businesses before the age of 30, even before starting Toms, the global shoe brand best known for its simple slip-on shoes, and its one-for-one giving program. Over the past 14 years, they've donated more than 95 million pairs of shoes in 85 countries. The for-profit company was created after a trip Blake took to Argentina in 2006, and built not only on hustle, but on Blake's personal mission to create a brand around impact and purpose. Eventually, Toms moved into providing sight-saving surgery for people around the world and started a coffee business to help fund clean water projects globally. But in 2014, Blake decided to step back from his role as chief shoe giver and to sell half of the company. He used the proceeds to set up an entrepreneurship fund and to date has backed 25 social enterprises. But as you'll hear, it's around this time that Blake was starting to feel lost and began to struggle with depression. It's a difficult journey that has led him onto his latest venture, which we'll focus on today. It's called Made For, a 10-month analog program created alongside scientists from Stanford and Harvard and designed to help people cultivate good habits and practices in their lives, from hydration to sleeping better. It's a betterment toolkit Blake uses himself every day, and a resource he hopes will help more people today who are thinking about working on themselves, especially after being in lockdown. As you'll hear, Blake is confident people will connect with the brand because it's closely tied to his personal story. And do stick around to the end of our conversation when Blake takes a few questions from the audience. Here's Blake now from his home in Jackson, Wyoming, where he began by telling me about the growth of Toms and his decision to take a step back.
Sure. I mean, I think the thing that's so amazing about Toms, really different than the other four businesses I started before that, was, and the thing that's so kind of karmic, if you will, is that when I started Toms, I just saw it as a small project. I didn't think we would make any money. I wanted to help some kids get shoes in Argentina that I met while traveling. And then, of course, you know, it was the exact opposite. It became an incredibly fast-growing business. We helped millions of people, but we made millions of dollars as well. You know, it totally changed my life as an entrepreneur. And before I knew it, I had, you know, hundreds of employees all over the world, you know, a huge operation and a much bigger operation than I had ever experienced as an entrepreneur in these other businesses. So what really led to kind of stepping back was just a little bit of personal burnout myself. I mean, even though I got a lot of joy and excitement of helping, going on these giving trips and being with kids around the world, helping them get shoes, and there was a lot of just personal excitement of growing a company. I think we were the fastest growing footwear company in the world for 4 years consecutively. That was exciting, but at a certain point, I realized that I had like neglected every other aspect of my life. And so I did just step down twice. I did 2012, I took a pause and I went to Austin and hired my first CEO, but I was still really involved. I was just really involved from Austin. But then I think the more interesting one was in 2014, I sold half the company, which I had never had any investors, hired, you know, an incredible, you know, visionary CEO, and gave him full control of the company. So that time I really, kind of not just stepped down, but kind of stepped aside. And that was a really important kind of mile marker in my life. That's also when my ex-wife now had her first kid. And so I really focused on being a dad and a lot of other areas of my life besides Tom's.
What was it you think that led you to that decision for the second time to hire a CEO and really step away, sell a good portion of the business? I know you would go on to set up a fund that does support social enterprise, which is amazing. But what was sort of the thing that made you move away? I've heard you say it just became a little bit too corporate for you.
Yeah, it became a little bit corporate. It also, I realized that it just, My greatest skills, I believe, in business is at the early stage. I love working with small teams. I love new ideas. I love making an impact in new ways. And it just got to the point to where, you know, we were giving millions of shoes to kids around the world. We were doing all these amazing things, but it just felt like I was doing the same thing over and over again. And so for me, really stepping down in 2014 or stepping aside, was really I felt that there was someone who was a professional CEO and other people like that. They would actually serve the mission of Tom's better than the founder continuing to do it, because some people just love the day-to-day, you know, kind of planned growth and excellence that you need to run a business of that size. And that just wasn't, I realized, my forte. So, and also I want to focus on other things. I have a lot of interest, and I've been doing that at that point. I've been doing that for 10 years. So it just felt like the right time.
You know, I touched on the fact that you did set up a fund to support social enterprise. And obviously, Tom's was set up as an impact business from the start to date. I think it's donated more than 95 million shoes all around the world, you know, for people in need. You moved into eyeglasses as well. You moved into coffee. So there's a lot there. When you step back, were you thinking about what else you might be able to get involved in? Or was it just really trying to share some of the experiences that you'd had?
Yeah, so I think it's an interesting question and segue to kind of like what happened after. I think a lot of people don't really know, you know, kind of some of this personal challenges I went through after I stepped aside. You know, besides investing in social enterprises, which I've now invested in, I think, 27 companies and have mentored a lot of those founders, that was really wonderful. But not having a day-to-day thing that I was putting my heart and energy into over time really affected me in a negative way. You know, I took up rock climbing and race car driving and like all these things that I never had time to do before. But after doing that for about a year, year and a half, I realized like I didn't have something that I felt was like an overarching purpose. And I actually slipped into a state of depression. I remember in middle of 2015, going into the holidays, you know, really kind of not really having any energy to get out of bed, kind of feeling like I didn't have as much joy with my hobbies that I had the year before, you know, kind of a little bit rudderless. And that really kind of led me to ask some big questions that ultimately led to the founding of the new company I'm working on now, Made For. But sometimes I think you have to kind of go through some personal suffering in order to have, you know, kind of the motivation to put your heart and energy into something new. So I'm actually thankful for those kind of really challenging 6 months that I had back in 2015.
You know, we'll definitely come on to Made For. I want to spend most of the time talking about that and this new venture that you have that is quite exciting. I'd love to just hear about that period in around 2015 you're talking about, because when you hear your story, you know, people talk about being burnt out and maybe, you know, leaving Tom's, but actually the reality is you came onto some of these personal struggles because you didn't have anything going on, actually.
Exactly.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it was. You know, I mean, you hear a lot of people have burnout, and that's one type of, I think, mental struggle. But I think a deeper part, if you've committed your whole life to having an impact, is not feeling like your days are being purposeful or that your efforts are being, you know, kind of helping and serving. And so that really affected me. But also what I realized is it wasn't just the lack of like a day-to-day purpose that caused the depression, but it was also that like I had really neglected kind of my physical and mental health probably since I started my first company when I was 19. Like, I am a very hard worker. I mean, that's what I think most people would say about me. And so all those years of not taking care of my, you know, kind of body and mind and even my, you know, kind of spiritual self really just caught up to me. And so, you know, now when the kind of the music stopped, so to speak, and I had the void of time, then those things that I neglected became more obvious, you know, and those things are like understanding how to get a proper night's sleep or, you know, moving your body and not just exercising to exercise, but to really have vitality and being able to have, you know, kind of pliability and to be able to move your body in a number of different ways so you don't constantly get injured. You know, other things like meditation and breath work. Like, these are things I had never really done. Those are things that I started to dig into to help me kind of come out of this kind of hard time.
That's fascinating, because a lot of those tools, obviously, people will be thinking about today and how they can help themselves, business leaders and people all around the world. You know, I think I've read somewhere that you've written in your journal every day since you were 15. You're a best-selling author. You've started to share advice on your own website, I think. Did that take something away from you? Do you think people always wanting a little bit of advice or guidance, but, you know, not realizing that entrepreneurs in themselves, even however successful, you know, do have struggles?
Yeah, I think the thing is just, you know, for people who get so much joy from serving and giving something bigger than themselves, oftentimes throw themselves so far into it that they neglect some of their basic needs. And I don't think that's just the case for entrepreneurs or CEOs. I think that's actually the case for most people in modern society. You know, one of the things that we do talk about with Madefor is, like, you, in a sense, you kind of need an enemy when you have a purpose-driven business. And the enemy of Madefor is really the challenges of modern living. I mean, that really affects everyone. It affects, you know, whether you're working or not working. It's a lot of effects of the digital distraction in our life, the demand to constantly be multitasking, the number of, you know, kind of entertainment and media outlets that we're constantly getting information from. Like, there's a lot of stuff that just modern society has, you know, kind of crept into our lives that are really kind of eroding some of our mental well-being. And so that's some of the stuff that I also recognize that really everyone's being affected by, whether you're running a company or starting a company or not.
You mentioned digital distraction there, and I'd love to jump into Madefor, which is a program for people to go through over 10 months, I think. So this is 10 activities that you can pick up over 21 days. But the interesting thing about it is that it's all analog. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So when we started out, because I have a business partner, his name is Pat Dossett, and he was a Navy SEAL in the military for 9 years and really top of the top in terms of, you know, that vocation. And Pat brings a lot of the kind of, you know, I would say kind of discipline around, you know, bringing the science into everything that we share. And so when we started, there were two things that we recognized really quickly. If we were going to help people with their mental and physical health and even help them define and understand more of what their purpose is, and that's where the name Madefor comes, is, you know, our goal is that everyone not only goes through the program, really understands what they're made of, but ultimately can answer the question, what am I made for? Because that's the question that I was, you know, in a sense, struggling with. And so the months, there's two things. The analog piece that you picked up on is probably the most kind of radical, ironically. And that is because when we talk to scientists from Stanford and Harvard and the head of neuroscience at Stanford, who worked very closely with us and is on our advisory board, you know, they continue to come back to the fact that digital distraction was really keeping people from learning some of the really critical keystone habits and practices because they were constantly distracted. So all these apps that say help you to form a new habit, or apps that help you meditate better, or apps, like all these digital apps are, you know, they're nice and they sound good and they're fun to download, but in terms of their actual efficacy, it's really hard to see the results because all the other distractions that exist on that device that you're getting the content from. And so we decided early on, even if it was going to be more expensive to deliver the program and more challenging to deliver the program, we were going to commit to an analog-only program because we didn't want people to be distracted when they're learning these very important habits and practices. And then the second thing you also point out is it's 10 months long. I mean, that's a long time. And you're only learning one basic thing per month. So we might only focus on absolutely preparing you and optimizing your sleep each night for 21 days. And that's like only one thing you're focused on during that month. And that's because we did a lot of work with neuroscientists around the concept of deep learning. And we really, as a society, have lost the ability and the practice of deep learning. We listen to a podcast and we get 10 tips. You know, we read a book and there's 20 new things to do. And this is all really important information, and very little of it actually ever gets put into practice. So if we were going to really change people's lives in a meaningful way, we knew that it would not be easy, and we had to do it one practice at a time in an analog setting and over a 30-day period of time. And so that's the real kind of keystones that the program is built on.
I wonder what in this program might be interesting for people in this time right now. Obviously, we're all feeling a little bit drained. Obviously, cabin fever is a big part of it, but you know, there's a big impact of this global pandemic on I think our well-being and just our state. So, you know, obviously the timing of this business is quite interesting. Has that factored at all into the conversations you guys are having?
It's been amazing. Like, I mean, everything you kind of look back in your life and you're like, see, sometimes the perfect timing of things. You know, we worked on this program developing it for 2 years. The first year was all us meeting with a scientist and creating the actual curriculum, the program, designing the tools. And then the second year, instead of launching a year ago like we could have, we actually did a beta test of 1,300 people from all walks of life and had them go through the program, and we learned and we tweaked and we refined the program. And then we had set March 4th as our launch date. And so we went to New York, we launched, we had some great media coverage and a lot of new signups. And then of course, you know, COVID-19 hit. What's been interesting is a lot of those people that signed up at the beginning of March, just even though they're a couple months into the program now, they've found that this has been such a wonderful experience because they're in their homes. They're wanting to come out of this experience stronger, you know, more clear, healthier than they were when they went into it. And the fact that the whole program is designed to be done, you know, in one-on-one in your home has been really great. Now, it definitely, I think as a business, has been hard because there's so much media clutter and noise, rightfully so, with everything focused on Corona, that, you know, we haven't been able to promote the program the way that we expected to this spring. But we have, you know, probably, I don't know, 1,000 people going through the program right now, and they're all giving us great feedback on how this is really helping them during this very challenging time. And so it's been very gratifying in that regard.
You know, just to walk back a little bit, Blake, I've heard you say that, you know, the theme sort of your entrepreneurial journey is that each new business you start, it really has nothing to do with the last. And each venture is sort of about you following your curiosity and your interest. So obviously this new company sort of gels with the world that you are interested in, a little bit of taking care of yourself and wellness. I wonder how fulfilling that is for you just now. Obviously we talked about that a little bit, but where do you sort of see this going? You know, is it enough for you at this moment in the scale that it's at? And how far do you see yourself taking this?
Yeah, I think that, you know, one thing that has happened since 2015 that I have just kind of realigned all my, or not all, but most of my efforts around is really trying to help people with mental health. And so I've recognized that that is one of the biggest challenges of our time after spending, you know, over a decade helping people in the most devastating economic conditions with basic needs like water, you know, eyesight surgeries and shoes. I have now seen that, like, in order to continue to help in those areas, we got to take care of people in the first world, because in the first world countries, if we don't have strong mental health, the whole system is at risk. And so I've really dedicated, not just with Made For, but even my personal philanthropy. You know, last year, me and a few other people funded the first department of psychedelic research for many mental disorders at Johns Hopkins. Me and Tim Ferriss and a few others did that. And that was a big check that we all wrote to endow that department, which is the first and I think only department in the country that is specifically focused on, you know, the effect of psychedelics and how they can be used in a way to treat things like depression or PTSD and other mental illnesses. So I'm leaning into that heavily from a philanthropic standpoint. And then also just, you know, other areas of mental health beyond Made For that I'm working on in terms of just funding different programs, especially with teens and suicide and different things like that. So in general, I'm most effective when kind of my whole world is thematically focused on one thing, and that way I can leverage my philanthropy from my business to other things. But I really feel like right now where I'm being called, and this could change, like you said before, all my businesses have kind of been following my own personal curiosity and instincts, is right now is how can I use my resources, my businesses as a way to share lessons that I'm learning through my own experiments in mental health, wellness. And that's just kind of where I'm at.
You know, we touched a little bit on the companies that you have grown, and obviously you going out and speaking to people, doing speaking appearances, doing interviews, doing podcasts, and things like that. There is this sort of idea of the successful entrepreneur as, you know, a bit bulletproof, and you know, the people that are just better built for those scenarios and things like that. But, you know, obviously that's taken a big toll on you personally, sort of growing companies over the past 25 years. It seems to me like you're in a good place right now, but I'm just curious about what you would want people to learn about your journey.
I think, you know, it really is interesting because it really kind of goes back to the practices of Made For. I mean, it's funny. I tell people all the time, especially during, you know, COVID-19, is like when people say, gosh, it really seems like you're really thriving during this. And I'm doing a lot of work on the nonprofit side with, you know, first responders and my hometown in Jackson Hole. And I say, like, look, I'm doing the 10 things. You know, it's not that that's the only way to thrive. But for me, by focusing on these small things, and now most of them are just automated in my life, it helps me, you know, start my day better. It helps me have energy and positivity through the day better, and helps me basically make sense of what happened during the day better. And so, you know, I really think the key, even outside of the Made For program, but Made For is designed to help people with this, is really not to think that there's any silver bullet or there's any kind of magical gene that some people who thrive have that others don't, or a certain income level. I mean, I think that's totally been debunked in terms of money equals happiness. I mean, there's more people who commit suicide in higher income brackets every year than in lower income brackets. So what we found is it's not any of these external things that society has promised us that will make us, you know, have that deep sense of fulfillment and joy and purpose and energy to continue doing the work that you do. But it's these internal practices, and that's what we teach you with Made For, and that's what I'm committed to every day.
Blake, thank you so much for walking us through your journey to starting Made For. Now, if it's okay with you, I'd like to put some questions to you from and on behalf of our audience to hear your advice for business owners looking for a little bit of guidance in this time. And the first one comes from a listener in my hometown. Have a listen.
Hi there. This is Margaret Dinsdale from Toronto. I had a successful natural skincare company a few years ago for about 12 years. And there was a number of family events that occurred, and I sold my business. I wrote a best-selling book called Skin Deep about it and wrote some articles. Now, recently, an old friend contacted me interested in starting up a new venture, and we were all on board. I used my access to the world's medical and scientific databases to prepare a really nice line of unique products with great sustainable packaging, and we were just about to go into pre-production when COVID-19 stopped us cold. So we've taken a step back, and we're thinking of looking at a soft September launch. Now, we were going to go ahead with online sales, of course, anyways, mail order, as well as subscription boxes and that sort of thing. But we're looking at brick and mortar health food stores, which are a big retailer of our products. So I guess my question is what would the future hold for brick and mortar, and also for online sales? Thank you so much, and I hope you all have a good day.
Great question there. And Blake, obviously that plays into a little bit of your last company, or the last one you built anyways, in Tom's, which did have obviously a need to be in brick and mortar, but obviously direct to consumer is massive these days. What would be the important thing, do you think, for Margaret to focus on at this stage where she says she's kind of had to take a step back?
Yeah, I mean, I 100% would focus on D2C. I mean, you know, and I think that, you know, almost all of the great brands that are being built during this time are establishing themselves first directly with the consumer, you know, and really finding that key customer. And it's more cost effective, and during this time it's more simple. I mean, there's a number of reasons, but yeah, I mean, the short answer is D2C is absolutely the way to go. And if you can't build a business D2C, then it's gonna be very hard to build it through brick and mortar.
Yeah, that's interesting. You see a lot of other brands obviously later branch into physical retail, and it becomes an important part of their business. Warby Parker, Away. There's many other examples like that. So, you know, in going direct to consumer then, what would be sort of the most important part to get right before you decide to hit that launch?
Well, I think the thing to get right is having reorders. A lot of people will buy something once, they might get a promotion or they might hear about it on a podcast or something, but it's really about reorders. And I bring that back to Made For. Our program is $75 a month if you pay for the whole thing, or $95 a month if you do it month to month. But something like 92% of the people who start the program finish the program. And so that to me is saying that they're getting value month after month. And it's the same thing in any D2C business. Like, you've got to be seeing real, really enthusiasts that are reordering month after month, especially in skincare. I mean, I think skincare is exactly in that category. Like, if you try a cream or whatever and you don't get it again, well, then obviously something is not working with the product.
Great answer there, and we hope that works for Margaret in Toronto. Secondly, Blake, I would love to just ask you about companies right now who are thinking about setting up a charitable element of the business. Obviously, a lot of companies right now are doing what they can to support their communities, to support healthcare workers where they are. But, before all this happened, a lot of people are thinking about sustainability. Customers are sort of demanding that companies be a little bit more transparent. They move in that direction. For someone that set up what was one of the sort of big companies that gave the one-to-one or created it with Tom's, what would be your advice for someone that wants to set that up and put it sort of inside the business from the very start, or perhaps transition into that for an existing business?
Well, first off, I think it's easier if you start with that, because then it's integrated into the DNA of the business and the offering to the customer. And if you have investors, then it's with full transparency that part of the profits are going to be going to that. But you could also integrate it later. It's just harder. I think the most important thing I tell people is that it's just got to be deeply connected to the whole business. Like, it can't be a side thing. It can't be like, we sell skincare and we help elephants in Africa. And you see a lot of that, frankly, because the founder or the management team might be really passionate about animal rights, and the business has nothing to do with animal rights, so they try to slap it on, and it just doesn't work for the consumer. So it really needs to be connected to what they're buying, what service they're experiencing, and to have that direct correlation.
Just a bonus question I'm thinking about here, Blake, for you, and perhaps lastly, as someone that has sought out different opportunities and just seized on these things that you're seeing as money-making ventures, or as good business-building ventures in your past. I'm thinking of when you put up billboards or started a laundry service at a university. All these things. Out of this pandemic, obviously, people will be thinking about where opportunity lies. Is there anything you might have your eye on right now? Obviously, you're an investor as well. Is there any sort of place where you think there might be great opportunity in the days, weeks, and years ahead as we move out of this pandemic?
I mean, I think a big part is, I mean, the platform we're on right now, right? Like, I mean, Zoom's not going to be the only player. Skype's not going to be the only player. I mean, I think every time you think that every bell and whistle's been thought of, there's a new opportunity. I think there's going to be more and more virtual working, both because of the pandemic, but also, I don't think this is going to be the last pandemic. So I think to be thinking about, like, okay, what are the key tools that allowed us to continue to do business, to continue to keep human connection, to make the quarantine more bearable? And really, if I was an entrepreneur looking to start a new business, I would make a list of what were the things that I valued the most during my time, and which companies of those do I feel there's the least amount of competition in that space. So that could be food delivery, it could be in, video conferencing, it could be in, finding a way to, still send, birthday presents, graduation presents, things like that. I mean, I haven't done the exercise myself, but that's the exercise I would do.
That's really interesting. We talk about on the show, we have talked about in recent weeks, a lot about the importance of brand in these times. People are looking for, a great story to help them through and align themselves with as well. They want to spend their money in the right places. So that's quite an important thing. How do you think people might go about starting to build that? Obviously, you've done it in past with Tom's and are starting something new now. So what are the steps, to get people really to come along on that journey and really find out about what you are about?
Well, I think it has to be something that they can self-identify with, So, like, I mean, part of the reason why I'm so open and transparent about my own struggle with mild depression in 2015 is I know there's a lot of people out there that are struggling the same way, and the Made For program could be really, really good for. Or maybe it hasn't got so severe that they're labeling it as depression, but they're just feeling a little bit knocked around by life. You know, they're kind of feeling like they're not sleeping as well as they used to, or they don't feel that their body moves the way that they want it to, or they don't feel that they ever have a break for themselves. And so these modern living challenges is exactly why we built Made For. And I think in creating the Made For brand and really getting people to respond to it, what one of the most important things is to be really authentic and transparent about our own personal stories that led to the creation of the program. And so I would say for any entrepreneur that has a business that's starting out, like really make sure that your motivation for being in business is aligned with your values and your personal story, and then use that in this time as a way to share that, because people really connect to personal stories much more than any kind of marketing or advertising bullshit.
Very well said. And I think that could relate to all types of businesses, from brick and mortar to D2C, all kinds of businesses around the world. Blake, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, wonderful interview. Thank you so much and have a great day.
Blake Mycoskie, founder of Tom's and the co-founder of Made For. My thanks to Blake for his time. You can find out more at getmadefor.com. Thanks as well to our producer, Holly Fisher, and to Christy Evans, who mixed and edited this show. Don't forget to get your questions in for next week's expert panel, question@monocle.com. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.